listening to the Next Level Learning Podcast, part of the Keystone Area Education Agency. Hey everyone, welcome back to the next episode of the Next Level Learning Podcast, the podcast here presented by the Keystone AEA, and talking about different ways to move students into the upper levels of thinking and learning. That's always the goal, I think, of every educator, is what we try to do every day. And so sharing those strategies is probably the best thing we can do to push education further. So I actually have here today with me, not Norma, I have Jason. And Jason is actually another fellow colleague, one of the very few males on the instructional services staff here at Keystone AEA. So it's always good to welcome in another partner like that. And Jason, the reason why I brought Jason in is because the person we interviewed today talks a little bit about the science background. And I'll be honest with you, I am not a science guy. I didn't have a whole lot of interest in science growing up and everything else. So I thought I got to bring Jason in. And I'll let Jason Martenheiner talk a little bit about himself as far as his experience with the AEA and then even before the AEA, your days in education. So take it away, Jason.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. So, yeah, I'm Jason Martenheiner. I work at Keystone AEA as the School Improvement Facilitator for Science. But prior to coming to Keystone, most of my experience in teaching came from the secondary classroom. So physics, chemistry, physical science, earth science, all of those all the way from a small school I started off teaching in Manly, Iowa. So I had six different preps and all over the place. And then before coming to Keystone, I was at West High teaching physics all day long. So I've had the whole spectrum for all that setup.
So you got a lot of experience from various size classrooms to different content areas within science and everything else. So that perspective will be really good as we talk through some of this stuff, although we kind of branch off a little bit from science in the interview with Kelly. But for the most part, in terms of science stuff, that's where I need to be schooled. So that's where your expertise will come in a little bit here, Jason. But let me introduce the person who I had a chance to interview. Her name is Kelly Olson. She's currently an instructional coach in the Alamakee School District, and the building she is at is in Waukon, Iowa. And she was a classroom teacher prior to that. She taught middle school science and social studies, and so she kind of had to cover a little bit of everything as well, kind of like you, Jason, only hers is outside the science area as well. And she kind of talks a little bit about some of the strategies that she used to get students to move into the upper levels, but it kind of looks different depending on the content area, which I wasn't really expecting, but she mentions that slightly. So let's take a look at this first clip here with Kelly.
I think the biggest thing that I tried to do to reach those higher levels of Blooms is always put them in the driver's seat in terms of creating projects and tying it to real life. So they saw that application, trying to get those essential questions posted. So they were really seeing the application of what they were learning and then able to show their learning through their, creating projects and tried to make it as project-based as I could. When I taught science, the FOSS kits is what we used in the classroom, and they have those driving questions kind of built right within them, and I really felt like those helped. So it wasn't just recall and it wasn't just remembering facts, but they were actually thinking about how this affects them in their everyday life.
So do you feel like you were combining FOSS kits with other kinds of strategies? Because when I hear you talk, it almost sounds like you had more of like a project-based learning kind of methodology going on, or would you say it's a variation of that with a combination of a few other things?
I really tried as much as possible to make it project-based learning and student-driven. I think if I were to go, each year, I think you look at what you do and you kind of tweak it a little bit. I think I wasn't totally there yet, but I was, trying to also let the students this was our essential question, and then let them kind of go their own way with that. I tried a strategy inquiry boards, and with our essential question, I would post it just on a Padlet. And then with that, students could post their own questions that they had based off of what we were learning and off of that essential question. And then they had the opportunity to go research that question and find out what they were passionate about with that essential question and those learning targets.
So Kelly talks a little bit about their, I heard essential questioning and inquiry, which seems to be two things that are very easy to build into a science classroom. I come from a more English classroom background, and you want to ideally get students to do that kind of stuff, but it seemed like I was struggling more with my own classroom. But from your own experience, Jason, essential questioning, inquiry, very easy things, would you say, to include?
Yeah, they fit in pretty naturally, especially as we look at the focus on the new standards and these performance expectations. We see a real emphasis on phenomena and where phenomena have a role in our classroom. So we present students with something that naturally drives questions. They come up with their own questions, and in the process of trying to answer how and why does this phenomena take place, or from the engineering side, how do we address this design challenge? So we answer all those little pieces. They're all parts of the puzzle, and all those puzzle pieces are drawn together in order to get us our larger answer.
So as a person with no real science background, when you say the word phenomena, you're talking about more along the lines of that big, is it another word for essential question?
Yeah,
or is it bigger than that?
It could be. You know, the phenomena is the thing that we can see or experience that we could actually investigate. And The questions naturally come from that. So for instance, let me give you an example. Let's say I showed a picture of what a human would see in the dark, and then put side by side an image of what a cat would see in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
And those are different. They look very different. The cat has a much more sharper image of what they see, but it's washed out. The colors aren't really there. So that's the phenomena. Animals see differently in the dark.
Okay.
What questions might we have? Well, why? Like, why do humans see this way versus cats? And all of a sudden, we start asking, well, how do we even see? Like, what do we need in order to see? And we get that piece of the puzzle. And then once we understand that we have to have some light in order to see, well, then what does our eye do with that? Like, what are the structures in the eye that let us see? And now we talk about rods and cones. And, oh, so cats have different proportions there. And as we build towards all these pieces, the answer to one question just drives the next one and the next one. And eventually we can put all those pieces together to get an answer to our big question or maybe our driving question based on that phenomenon.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And I'm just putting myself in the perspective of the student in that situation. And I'm already in the upper levels. I mean, from the get-go, it seems, and I'm continuously remaining there with all these learnings, but then questionings and more learnings and questionings in the cycle just seems to continue.
Yeah, that's one of the big pieces. You know, it doesn't sideline the idea that we need facts and science. I mean, one of my favorite quotes about facts and science is, you know, science uses facts just like a house uses stones. But likewise, a pile of stones doesn't make a house, just like a pile of facts doesn't make science. It's when you put organization to those and provide structure, that higher level pieces, that's where we get to the science.
For the English teacher, that makes total sense. I totally get that. So now she mentioned something in a little bit there that I asked further about, and that's the use of FOSS kits. This is something I am not familiar with at all, but I'll let her explain a little bit what the FOSS kit is, and then maybe you could explain even further about how that helps shape some of the higher level thinking as well.
Sure.
The FOSS kits are so they're everything we did in them, you know, was hands-on, and they try as much as possible to, okay, we're learning about, for example, the one FOSS kit that I used was mysterious powders. So in this FOSS kit, students are put as a researcher, a lead researcher. So they're given a role, and we're learning all about chemical and physical properties, but they're seeing where in real life do they use these. Where would I need to know this? Why is this important? And they really have to analyze the results that they get. They're gathering data. They're having to put it in charts. They're having to put it in, you know, graphs and things like that. And they're having to analyze what does this mean? And then they're having to apply it. Okay, I found this. This is the data that I got. now I have to, what does this mean? They have to apply it into, you know, the situation that they were looking at.
So these FOSS kits seem to be a pretty powerful tool for a science classroom, but I kind of get the idea of it because I remember certain projects that I did in my own experience in a high school classroom. But when it's talking about a whole kit, it's something that's kind of bundled and it's got some stuff with it. I mean, could you explain further exactly what these, and it's FOSS, correct?
Yeah, it stands for Full Option Science System.
Okay,
so all right. So this would be from out of the University of California, Berkeley, and a lot of the research they did, it was an NSF-funded program. A little bit of history is actually it was a program that was developed in order to try to address the needs of students that have special needs around that, and how can they access science in a good and equal environment. And they found out, as we know, all of these different learning strategies that work there work for all students, and mm-hmm. So that's how it expanded.
Yeah.
One of the main proponents of any research-based curriculum you're going to find is that students need to engage with these science concepts prior to digging in to anything else. So they're going to need a chance to experience what's going on, and then that develops a natural reason to dig into text or to dig into videos or to dig into other places where they can kind of consult the experts and find out how to tie that together. So it really has them synthesizing a lot of different skills across disciplines.
So it's asking the questions first, getting the students almost jumping into those upper levels, but then when it comes time to do some further understanding, because when you ask those big questions and you don't know the answer, now we have a reason to go back and do more of the reading part of it or the researching part of it. So it's kind of backwards. You don't start at the bottom of Bloom's and work your way up. You're saying start at the top and then go down to the lower levels when you need to based on the questions and thinking that you have in the upper levels. Am I interpreting that correctly?
That's exactly right. Cool. So we're not trying to answer for the student, why do I want to read this? They know why they want to read it. They got to answer this question. They got to figure out what's going on. That's why I want to go read this passage.
Perfect. And I remember being totally backwards back when I was in high school was read, then we're going to apply this stuff and move into the upper levels. But I like that strategy of starting the upper levels and going down to the lower levels when needed. That's really good. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about moving into sort of some more strategies that Kelly talks about in the social studies classroom, and as well as her role now as a coach, and how does that look a little differently now that she's coaching teachers and not teaching directly with students. So we'll be right back.
Come light up your learning at Keystone's premier education conference on June 20th and 21st in Dubuque, Iowa. Keynote speakers include nationally known Pete Hall, Joe Beckman, and back by popular demand, Trevor Regan. There will be something for everyone. Be sure to take advantage of the $99 early bird registration. For more information, check out our website at www.aea1.k12.ia.us. or follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We hope you will join us to light up your learning.
Welcome back to the Next Level Learning Podcast. I'm Jared Borman, and I'm here with Jason Martin-Heiner, another consultant here at the AEA, specifically for science. And we're talking about our interview with Kelly Olson, an instructional coach at the Allen McKee School District. And she talked a little bit about her experience with FOSS kits. Now, I think it's probably important to mention, since FOSS kits are also involved here at the Keystone AEA. Do you want to talk about how teachers can maybe get their hands on some of this stuff?
Yeah, sure. So Allen McKee is just one of the districts that participates in what we call the Eastern Iowa Science Collaborative, or EISC, if you see that acronym tossed around any. It's a collaboration between multiple AEAs in Eastern Iowa, Keystone, Grant Wood, Mississippi Bend, and Great Prairie. And we work together to provide these aligned materials to teachers along with the professional development to properly implement it in the classroom. So if a teacher is going to use, for instance, a mixtures and solutions unit, There would be a full day training, not only around just, you know, what's good teaching practice and what do we want to get at with the focus questions, but also getting a chance to experience the unit as the learner. So they get to go through some sample investigations, they use the same materials, they collect the data, they have the conversations, and it's all modeled by a classroom teacher who has used this with students. So they get that background before they go back and use it with their own students. That participation is all set up through the school or through the district, and there are a fair number of districts actually in Keystone that participate in the collaborative.
So I also asked Kelly, because I was just curious for myself, as far as the FOSS kits themselves, one FOSS kit sounds pretty robust, sounds very much involved. So I asked her, out of curiosity, from in the trenches experience, so to speak, how long does a FOSS kit really take to dig into and have students move through completely? So let's take a listen as far as what she thought about that.
One FOSS kit normally takes about a quarter.
A whole quarter, okay. And then in that quarter, how many learning standards are these students really hitting?
It hits a lot, the majority of the physical science standards. So within the kit, it's broke down into investigations, and there's 8 investigations throughout that particular kit. And so each investigation, there's some overlap in there. You know, it's not cut and dry, it's this one, but you really are focusing. So I would say it at least hits 8, maybe 6 to 8 learning standards.
So a quarter seems like a pretty substantial amount of time to be spending on one particular unit. But it sounds like students are able to hit so many standards within each of these. I mean, is that your experience too, Jason?
Yep. Yeah. So if you look at the full year structure and what you might be considered fully implemented, you'd probably do 3 units over the course of the year. And they're generally grouped by the 3 disciplines in science. So we've got earth and space, we've got physical, and we've got life science. But beyond just those, I already kind of mentioned how there's a lot of reason to have students accessing video and articles and reading. And so, yeah, you're covering not only a lot of science standards, but you're also hitting your ELA standards. And there's a number of math standards that naturally come in with graph reading, graph writing, drawing. We encourage students to use science notebooks. So you've got the writing aspect that comes into play. So, yeah, it's a big time commitment. But I think, as Kelly mentioned, you can hit a lot of standards in a very authentic way.
And, you know, you've probably encountered teachers just as I have, Jason, that that sort of talk about, you know, I have so much time to cover all these standards, and they feel like they have to hit one standard at a time, almost in a row, which also, when you look at the main resource that they're using, is the textbook. That's how the textbook is laid out. It's per chapter and everything else, but it doesn't have to be that way, is essentially what you're saying with these FOSS kits.
Yeah, for sure, especially when we look at the use of a science notebook, which I know is another step, but did a lot of productive work with teachers, having students engage with a science notebook, and all of a sudden we've got a piece where we can use for formative assessment for how are they writing. Mm-hmm. So we can do a read-through on just the writing skills, but then you go back and how are they doing on the science content? And here we have one student artifact that's giving us multiple points of data across multiple disciplines.
And I would assume that also, you just mentioned another strategy, the use of science notebooks is another way to get students into the upper levels. I imagine they're probably doing some analyzing, some evaluating inside those notebooks with some of the prompts that they have to do as part of these FOSS kits.
Yeah, exactly. And they really move beyond the idea of the traditional worksheet, because students are encouraged to go back to their notebooks. So it might be a week later, they've done an investigation, all of a sudden, oh, now I understand. One of the strategies we use is called a line of learning. They go back to that investigation too, they maybe different color, draw on a line, write your new understanding. I mean, that's a dynamic document.
So it's making direct connections in the learning. So you just answered a big question. It's not linear. It can sound really messy and chaotic, but in that process, you are helping them or making them sort of make connections from certain points of learning to other points of learning.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a progression there, and so their ideas may refine over time, and they have a new connection, and we do encourage them to go back, and that notebook is really meant to be their artifact of their learning and understanding, and so they update it and modify it as they go.
That's really cool you mentioned that, because Kelly also comes from a reading recovery background as well, as she mentioned. Not in this podcast, but off air, she mentioned that she does have a reading recovery background. And you kind of mentioned on some literacy standards that she also tried to incorporate from her years of experience in the social studies classroom.
Yeah.
So let's take a listen to sort of what she's learned from that content area as far as how to move students in the upper levels. And maybe we'll hear some connections that we can make as well.
Sure.
To be quite honest, social studies wasn't my area of expertise. So I had to tie in a lot of the reading strategies that I had a background with coming into the social studies classroom. A lot of researching and those kinds of strategies to make it applicable today. One activity that we did is we used Google Tour Builder, and the students researched ancient Egypt, points in ancient Egypt, and then we put it in Google Tour Builder to show kind of how the different points in ancient Egypt and how it would, they kind of then were able to take a tour of ancient Egypt. So I tried to tie kind of some of those researching and project-based things into social studies. And I would say that was probably one of the more fun activities that we did in social studies.
So Kelly, self-admittedly, tells us, you know, that she's not really comfortable with the social studies curriculum. She wasn't at the time when it was put on her plate. But she did what she knew best, and that was using those reading skills and literacy skills to incorporate more of the research-based stuff. And then, of course, bringing in the technology a little bit with the Google Tour Builder, which I'll admit I don't have any experience with.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, so that's something that's a new tool that I'll put down to take a look at later. But as far as the research skills, that comes also right over into the science area, the research part of it and everything else, and the literacy skills and whatnot. But what I like especially in that particular clip was the fact that she self-admittedly said, I wasn't comfortable with it. And I'm sure, I know I've encountered teachers that admit that. I've been there as a teacher, saying I honestly don't know. You've probably been there yourself as a teacher, and you encounter teachers in your area in science as well with just understanding that science isn't my comfortability level.
Yeah, that's one of the major barriers too. You know, science is not necessarily an area that's focused on, especially for teachers going through the elementary endorsement. You know, a lot of emphasis on reading, math, but science just may not have been an emphasis area. So we're all naturally a little anxious when we're expected to teach something that we're not comfortable with. So that's part of the training aspect that we go through the Eastern Iowa Science Collaborative, but you're still going to have to deal with the fact that kids are going to come up with questions.
Yeah.
And you don't know the answers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Ben, I think every educator has been there. Nobody walks into a classroom knowing everything there is to know about their content area or the pedagogy that goes behind teaching. So that self-admittance of, I don't know, is probably a pretty powerful tool. But what I really like is when we admit that we don't know, Kelly talks a little bit about her role, both as a teacher and as a coach. What do you do as an educator when you encounter that I don't know moment? I think we've all been there, and we probably deal with it a little differently, but I think it's worth taking a listen to as far as how she's been able to adapt to that and learn from it as well.
Sure.
Well, I think that it's okay for me to tell them I don't know. I think that if you had asked me that maybe 5 years ago or so, I would have said that I would have never told the student that I don't know. I don't know why I would have thought that, but that we can learn together and that we can, okay, I don't know this, so what are ways, I'm not going to know everything. What are ways that we can come together and we can learn from each other? So if we don't know something and you don't know something the next time, how can we get better? How can we learn? So I think that's kind of a powerful thing. in terms of myself, I try to, I think, attend any professional development that they will let me attend.
Yeah, so that was a great clip, you know, Kelly talking about this opening up to I'm not sure and let's learn about it and let's look to grow is, I think, exactly the type of environment that we want to develop in our classrooms so the kids are comfortable asking those questions and we're all kind of engaging in this collaborative inquiry, and that's how we grow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like it when I hear an educator, and honestly, it changed the environment in my own classroom when I started to say, I don't know, in front of the students. Because it's almost like if I say, I don't know, I am innately empowering them to ask this or say the same thing, which will then lead to more questions, just as we've already talked about, which then will hopefully lead to some answers. So I think it's a very powerful, that in itself is a very powerful tool to move students in the upper levels when an educator can say, I don't know. And then that way it can hopefully lead to a higher level thinking for both the educator and the student maybe in that whole process.
It's great modeling. And there were lots of times in my classroom when I would say, well, I don't know, even if I did know. Who cares? I don't know. And the kids start going, you know. Or do you know? You know?
It became a game, right?
It's like, I don't know. Let's find out. So.
Do I know or don't I know? I like that. But she also mentioned a few variety of ways to actually pick up information. And the number one thing was get information from other educators that are doing it. Now, how you do that is a multitude of different ways, is conferences,
sure.
Workshops. One of the powerful things for me personally has also been Twitter, as far as connecting with other educators out there. It can go beyond just the educators in your hallway.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot of opportunities. You know, we talk about the conferences we offer through Keystone, or whether that's national conferences, journals. You know, there's a lot of options for journals. Keystone actually has a cycling, I think, about from the science standpoint. All the journals available for the NSTA, you can sign up to be on the list.
Oh, wow.
Just every month, you're going to be on the list to get the journal. You know, you look through it for a week, you put it back on the van, it goes to the next person. So teachers have access to a lot of those professional development opportunities, whether the digital or the old-fashioned hard copy, too.
There you go. And either method is going to be fantastic. We're going to take another quick little break here, and when we come back, we're going to kind of dig more into Kelly's role as a coach, which we can kind of relate to as our roles here as consultants. I see myself as more like a coach in some aspects, and so we'll listen and see how she is moving now teachers into the upper levels of thinking as a coach. We'll be right back.
Need books for your classroom? Keystone AEA has books galore for you and your students to use. Sign up for Keystone AEA Book of the Month program. All you need to do is go to the Keystone AEA website, and under Media Services, you will find Book of the Month. Select the grade level fitting your classroom, and each month, a box of 25 books will be delivered to your school by our friendly, helpful van drivers. Keystone AEA has books for you.
Welcome back to the Next Level Learning Podcast, where we are featuring our interview with Kelly Olson, an instructional coach in the Allen McKee School District in Waukon, Iowa. And in this segment, I ask her a little bit more in depth about her role as an instructional coach and how that might play a role in moving students into the upper levels of thinking and learning.
When I was thinking about these questions, I was thinking about my coaching cycle that I'm in right now. And right now my coaching cycle is in the sixth grade math room. And it was interesting I went in a few days and I kind of observed, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to rethink. I got to learn, think about this math stuff that I haven't thought about for a while. And I got to talking with a teacher and she's like, I want them to do projects. I want them to be creating. You know, she was telling me, I want them to be, to not just be, you know, recalling this information. And I want, but I don't know how. So we kind of sat down together and we brainstormed together. And she had went to a math conference I think it was a year or two ago, and she said, I have this strategy or I have this idea, and I want to work together to get it rolled out. And so what we're doing to kind of try to push them into the upper levels is when the kids come in to class, they are given the MDF. And what the MDF are the five most difficult problems that they would get on the assignment that day. And we use Canvas as our LMS. We're also a Google Apps school. So we put these either on a Google form that's in LinkedIn to Canvas, or we use the quiz feature within Canvas. So we get very quick analytics. And with this, if they get four or five of those MDFs correct, they get to move to a choice board. And that choice board has 12, 13, I don't remember what we put on there, 12 or 13 activities that they then get to choose how they want to apply this knowledge. Is it through digital storytelling with the day's learning goal? Is it creating a scratch story focused on it, teaching this to another student? So we're trying to get them, if they already know this, we don't need them sitting through the lesson or getting, you know, retaught it or anything like that. We want them to apply and extend that.
So Kelly there kind of is talking about more or less helping that teacher who self-admittedly said, I'm not sure how to do this, or I don't know if you want to break it down to that. But they did want to move students into the upper level. So some of those strategies sound like really good strategies. Some, I'm sure they have different names from what we've heard before, like the MDF. Is that what she called it?
Yeah.
Those MDF. It sounds like they're basically setting up, I got students that are, I'm going to give them the five hard questions. If they can answer the majority of them, now they go to the choice board. If they can't answer the majority of them, now we can work with those students to build on that understanding in order for them to be able to answer those really hard questions.
Yeah, so it comes back to a lot of the same themes we've heard about, you know, talking about formative assessment, right? Essentially, yep. That's a formative assessment technique. You know this. Let's move you on so you can actually be growing and not just sitting through the same stuff. Those choice boards sounds a lot like differentiation, you know, give them some choice into how they want to demonstrate their learning. So, you know, all those good, sound, solid teaching practices coming into play.
And those are strategies I'm sure a lot of teachers that are listening kind of already do in their classroom, but maybe bring them together more, because mm-hmm. it sounds like through the use of that learning management system, they're able to bring a couple different strategies together almost into like a central place where that data or those analytics is coming into, so therefore they can make those teaching decisions or instructional decisions off of that.
And that's one of the big things that people oftentimes bring up is how do I analyze that data quickly so that I can make those instructional decisions, and using technology is a perfect way. You know, I used Google Forms a lot with some of our formative assessment pieces for science. They quickly generate those graphs. Oh, hey, we got half the class saying this, half the class saying that. All right, we'll find a partner, go break up, talk to them. What's your perspective?
So your lesson plans, it sounds like, are never really step A, step B, step C, step D all the way through. It's like, let's get to step A, and then step A could branch into two areas or three depending on what's the information that comes in, and then it's almost like a
flowchart. Yeah, for sure. And much more this kind of, oh, this is the piece of data I have, how does this change our path, rather than nope, lock step, let's go through this.
Yeah. And so what I found was really interesting in listening to her say that, I've experienced this with teachers, you know, as our roles as consultants, I see it no different as a coach, you know, except we have the opportunity to go into different buildings all the time and meet with all kinds of different teachers. But I find myself, when I talk with that teacher who says, I don't know, but I want to move them up, it's almost like you're going into that same process that you want the students to go through. You're thinking, you're bouncing ideas off of each other and almost being a soundboard off of one another. And in that process, you're analyzing, you're evaluating, you're trying to create something, an activity or an instructional strategy that actually allows the students to get into the upper level. So the teacher themselves is in the upper levels a little bit. And so I kind of asked Kelly about that, if she saw that perspective at all, and she had a pretty cool answer. So I'll cut to that real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I think working side by side with her, I think, you know, we're pushing each other to try to think of ideas together to push, you know, to push it higher, to make it more project based and high in the higher levels of Blooms. I you know, I think we're definitely pushing each other to think about that.
So Yeah, that was pretty cool to hear talk about that. It's the same kind of perspective I think we have as consultants at the AEA. I know that there have been a lot of times meeting with a teacher, same kind of a thing. This isn't working. We got to figure out where this is going. And sometimes it defaults back to, so what should I do? Like, what's the answer? And just like in our classroom where that doesn't work very well, a student just come in and say, what's the answer? I don't have all the answers. No one has all the answers. So coming back to that question, that collaborative inquiry about, okay, well, what are we trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm.
And what might we be able to do? Because, I come from a secondary background. That's where all my teaching experience is. So when I step into a second grade classroom, yeah, I might be bringing a lot of content knowledge. I might be bringing a lot of perspective on, how the learning progressions work K-12. But that teacher has all the experience of what's happening in the trenches with those kids in the classroom. So we each bring our strengths, and we combine those together, and we can use those to figure out a possible solution to the problem.
Yeah, and I think that's a really cool process, because I always, when people ask me, what do you exactly do at the AEA, it's really hard to kind of explain, because, yeah, my role technically is technology integration, but I ask a lot of questions. Like, it's great, because I get to hear what teachers are struggling with, but I get to ask a lot of questions that hopefully prompt more thinking, that prompt more of that upper-level kind of thinking. So being able to do that with the educators, and Kelly has the luxury of being a coach within a school district, so she gets to see those teachers more frequently.
Yeah.
She gets to really be that almost first responder, in a way, in an instructional setting when a teacher comes to that moment of kind of panic of, I don't know how to do this, how do I get it to the upper levels more frequently. So that was really interesting to hear her talk about, because we all can get in those upper levels when it comes to a holistic learning process. I like to think it's not a teaching process. It's all just a learning process, and we're all involved in that in one way or another.
For sure.
I think we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the role of technology and what that's been like for Kelly, because her role really is a technology coach, but she of course covers a lot of different stuff, kind of like what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so how technology has helped play a role in her own classroom, but then also played a role with her new coaching position, is really interesting to hear some of those come into play. So we'll take a quick commercial break, and we'll come right back.
Did you know Keystone AEA partners with 23 public and 27 non-public school districts? This means 33,000 students and 4,500 teachers, administrators, counselors, teacher librarians, and paraeducators are supported. Did you know Keystone AEA's media library offers more than 140,000 educational materials for teachers, students, and parents in a variety of formats? This includes books, DVDs, magazines, and hands-on kits. Keystone provides twice-a-week van delivery, taking about 11,500 items a week to area school districts. Materials can even be ordered online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For more information, visit our Keystone AEA website at www.aea1.k12.ia.us for more information about our programs and services.
Welcome back to the Next Level Learning Podcast. We're here with our interview with Kelly Olson, instructional coach at Alma Key School District in Waukon, Iowa. And before I wrapped up my interview with Kelly, I wanted to ask her one final question. And that was, what do you think is the key piece in moving students from lower levels to upper levels? I'm sure that could be... You ask that to any number of educators at any point in their career, and you're probably going to get a multitude of different answers. Kelly gave what I thought was a really interesting answer And something that I would probably agree is a key element in moving those students from lower levels to upper levels of learning.
I think that if there's one key to moving to those, I think that would be not be afraid to try something. I think that we want to make learning applicable to students. We want to make it real life. We want to have them applying it. But sometimes it's maybe not knowing exactly how to do that. And if we never try something, we're never going to know if it works or not. So it may not work. I don't know. And then you can build off of what did. Maybe there were bits and pieces that worked. So I'm not sure it's one key. I think it's just not being afraid to try something different.
So that was a great perspective. And kind of from two different levels, right? We can look at that from the student side of things. Fear may get in the way to ever getting to higher levels because they're just too afraid to try something that may not work. It's comfortable to give the facts, like, let's do the multiple choice. I can do this. That's no problem. So that's one side. And then the other side, I think that she was kind of emphasizing more, would be on the teaching side, if we're afraid to give up a little control to try something that might not work as well as we want, well, that's got a lot of anxiety. But that's all part of that culture that we want to develop in our classroom. If we're trying to develop a growth mindset type of culture, that's that kind of freedom to fail. That didn't work. But we learned something from that anyway, and we move forward.
And we've only done a few episodes lately, but I think if you go back and listen to the other ones, that seems to be kind of a common theme too, is if you really want students to get to those upper levels, as you had mentioned, they're not going to get there if you are the one that's sort of keeping them in those lower levels.
Yeah.
But what's keeping them there? What's keeping you from wanting to go into those upper levels? And it's that fear of, oh, I don't know how to get students more active with their thinking. But as she had just said, if you push that aside and you go seek answers, you go learn from other educators any way you can, pretty soon you're going to have students that are more actively thinking in the upper levels too. And I think that applies to almost every grade level, every content area, all across the board of learning.
Yep.
I think that's a great way to sort of end this particular episode of the Next Level Learning Podcast. Thank you, Jason, very much for joining me this time around.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I'm sure we'll have you back on another episode down the road at some point.
Sounds good. I look forward to it. A little rotating seat or something.
Be sure to check out the next episode of the Next Level Learning Podcast. If you haven't had a chance, be sure to go to our website and subscribe, because then you'll get the podcast coming to you. So if you go to the Keystone AEA website, or you can go to our quick little tiny URL, which is bit.ly/NLL podcast. You can go there, you can subscribe to the site, you'll have the podcast pushed out to you. And not only that, that is where you can also nominate other educators who are currently moving students into those upper levels of thinking and learning. Thanks for joining, and we'll see you next time. The Keystone AEA proudly supports the Next Level Learning Podcast.